Listen to a lecture in a History of Ideas class.
I want to talk about what was once a very popular way of studying character based on the shape of the skull. This theory, what was known as phrenology, was started by a German doctor named Franz Gall around the year 1800. What Gall proposed was that it was possible to determine character by feeling or reading the bumps on a person's head. I want to discuss here the basic principles of this theory, what it claimed to be able to do, and then why it became unfashionable and disappeared. Finally, I want to ask whether it contributed anything to our knowledge about the brain. So, what were some of the important features of phrenology? Gall said that the brain is the organ of the mind, that our talents and mental abilities stem from the brain. Furthermore, he said that the brain is composed of several distinct organs, and that each of the brain's faculties has a separate organ in a separate part of the brain. What's more, the size of any organ is a reflection of its power, and hence importance in the makeup of an individual's character. He also claimed that the overall shape of the brain is determined by the development of the organs which it contains. He argued that the outside skull takes on the shape of the brain which it encloses, and therefore the surface of the skull can be taken as an accurate reflection of the shape of the brain, and thus of a person's psychological tendencies and aptitudes. So how did it work? Well, a phrenologist would run his fingers over a person's head, examining every bump or indentation. So, for example, a protuberance, a bump in, say, the forehead, would indicate that the person had a pronounced tendency to be benevolent, since the organ of benevolence was supposedly in that location. An indentation somewhere else would mean a weakly developed attribute, say, a poor memory. Now, these things were the basic ideas of phrenology as practiced throughout the early 19th century. So widespread was this theory that many people would consult phrenologists before, for example, hiring an employee, or even, say, finding a marriage partner. Proponents also tried to determine a person's predisposition to crime or dishonesty. And unfortunately, at one stage, some scientists tried to justify notions such as criminal tendency or racial superiority through skull readings. At the peak of its popularity, phrenology was widely practiced in both North America and Europe. So, you're probably thinking all this is really bizarre, right? Well, so did some people back then. In truth, there had always been dissenting voices. The theory was made fun of and criticized by various individuals from its earliest appearance. So, what happened to phrenology? Well, educated people lost interest as more academic approaches to psychology became common. It was noticed by some that phrenologists tended to seek confirmation for their hypotheses while ignoring counterexamples. Suppose a person was said after a reading to have a marked tendency towards, let's say, honesty, but then exhibited strongly dishonest personality traits. It would be clear that the analysis was not accurate. Phrenologists tended to dogmatically reject or explain away falsifying evidence, such as this example shows. Have we learned anything from this theory? Well, I would like to argue that there was some value in it. First of all, it was an important step historically to emphasize that the brain was the organ of the mind, that thinking and feeling were done through the brain. Furthermore, Phrenologists were important in arguing that brain functions were localized, that some parts of the brain were specialized for certain abilities. Nowadays, of course, we know that this is only partly true. Some parts of the brain appear to be very much involved with certain functions, whereas many abilities seem to be distributed throughout the brain rather than in one location. So, to sum up, we can say that phrenology was of some scientific value, although many, if not most, of its ideas have been superseded.
Now get ready to answer the questions. You may use your notes to help you answer. 18. What is the lecture mainly about? 19. What points does the professor make about Gall's phrenological theory? 20. Listen again to part of the lecture, then answer the question.
At the peak of its popularity, phrenology was widely practiced in both North America and Europe. So, you're probably thinking all this is really bizarre, right?
Why does the professor say this?
So, you're probably thinking all this is really bizarre, right?
According to the professor, how did phrenologists approach evidence? 22. What does the professor imply about phrenology? 23. According to the professor, which of the following modern beliefs was contributed to by phrenology?